Welcome to another edition of Sports Look here on CARE Radio. So glad to have you with us here this evening. Also, very glad for our great Sport Look sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco John's, and Exchange Bank. Gus Counts with me here, Tom Counts. And Gus, upcoming sports schedule, another Friday-Saturday combo. And this Friday night, we're going to get our first look at Mar-Hill Mount Academy as the Ravens are going to be traveling just a little bit south of town, facing a conference opponent. We'll be at Pleasant Ridge, a 7 o'clock ball game, Rams-Ravens. So, should be a good one. And then Saturday afternoon, Benedictine comes back home looking for a W, and they're going to be facing the Pride of Clark University out of Dubuque, Iowa. 12:30 for the pregame show, a 1 o'clock kickoff. Raven football here on CARE Radio on Saturday. Wow, last Friday night, a lot of football going on around the area, Gus. And you and I saw a good game. Had a chance to go out to Effingham. And you know what? The Tigers, I thought, looked really, really good.
Yeah, the Tigers, you know, they were disciplined. They looked good on offense. Their defense held up well against Pleasant Ridge the other night. I mean, anytime you throw up a shutout, you've got to be happy with how your team played. And for ACCHS, right now you're sitting pretty at, what, 2-0? And you've got McLeod coming in for homecoming this week. I mean, it's a good time to be a Tiger.
Yeah, no question about it. Again, undefeated, a shutout last week, you know, 22-0. And they showed an ability to run the ball, throw the ball. Got some big guys on that team, so should be a very exciting time to be a Tiger fan. Other games that went on last Friday night saw Jackson Heights. We'll be seeing them before too long, and they were able to get by Horton 48-7. The Ravens, a big win over Oskaloosa. They scored 35 points, and JCN bounced back from that first week loss, and they shut out Valley Heights 20-0.
So it was, you know, for the most part, a good week to be a home team in the Northeast Kansas week last week. Jackson Heights, the only team to go on the road and get a win in the NEK last week.
Yep. Atchison, wow, there were a lot of points scored. Topeka, you know, anytime you get 80, 90 points, that was a pretty offensive night. But the Phoenix winning 47-36, Washington, and that had to be a great game, 16-14 over Sumner, and another close one, Ruskin over Wyandotte, 32-30. We're seeing some points scored by some of these teams this year. The offense is coming together.
Yeah, you know, as I was kind of going through some of the stuff earlier, I was laughing about that same exact thing. Is, you know, in the college game, we're seeing a lot of points get put up. In the high school games, we're seeing a lot of points put up. And how about Coach Smith's Atchison Phoenix team on Friday night? You know, got behind early to Highland Park, but again, continued to battle back and came away with a nice win for them to get, you know, back to 1-1 before you start the KCA schedule on Friday night. So, you know, Atchison playing really good football right now.
Yep, and they're going to be at home again. Wyandotte coming to Atchison Friday evening. Also in the Kansas City Atchison League, it'll be Turner at Harmon. Schlegel goes to Washington. And Sumner will be at home with Missouri's Lincoln Prep.
Lincoln Prep is a school that a lot of these KCA teams pick up as a non-con type of a game, just a filler type game. And Turner also, you know, weren't they in the Huron? Right, Turner,
yep,
the
Golden absolutely, Bears. The yeah. Golden Bears.
So they're a team that, you know, you see on a lot of KCA schedules. So I get it, they're not in the league, but those are teams that everybody seems like plays at some point.
This week in the Northeast Kansas League, we mentioned that we'll have the Mar-Hill Mount Academy Pleasant Ridge ball game. It'll be McLeod at ACCHS. The Tigers looking to go to 3-0. JCN over at Oskaloosa. You'll have Jackson Heights and Centralia, because this is a battle of a couple of good teams. 2-0 Jackson Heights, a 1-1 Centralia team, but man, Centralia, you can't count them out. They are so, so, so good.
Yeah, what, Centralia's only loss so far was Rossville,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So
Centralia, yeah, they're one of those teams that's like Miesha, we'll talk about here in a second, that always seems to find themselves right there when it matters.
Yep, and you're going to have Horton going to Valley Heights. So Valley Heights back playing ball games again. So it's good to see all of that going on. You look around the state of Kansas, and there are some big games. I'd tell you one big one is going to be that Riley County and Silver Lake. Riley County is 2-0. Silver Lake is 2-0. And a couple of Mid-East League conference opponents. That should be, I would think, a really good one.
Yeah, short little trip for both those teams. A game that a lot of people around the state will probably have an eye on, Carroll at Derby.
5A, number 3, Bishop Carroll. 6-8, number 1, Derby. How good is that? Carroll is 2-0, Derby is 1-0, and man, you know, they're just fantastic. Here's the trick, though. Derby has never lost in the series. Derby is 5-0 against Bishop Carroll, although, you know, the margins have never been big. It's not like it's been a really one-sided, lopsided kind of a win, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Carroll got a win over Wichita Northwest and then beat Wichita South last week, so they've beaten a couple of pretty good, pretty big teams early on. And by the way, Derby, not one, not two, the trifecta, 3 consecutive 6A state championships for them.
Yeah, so you're saying they're okay.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah, they're pretty okay.
Pretty all right.
They would be competitive in any league, I think.
You know a game that I think could be a really good game? It's going to happen over in Topeka on Friday night, and that's Junction City, the Jays, traveling to the Vikings of Topeka Seaman.
Junction City, you got to love them. They're 1-1 coming in. Topeka Seaman is 2-0 coming into the ball game and going to be at home. It'll be a hard trip for the Jays to make, but...
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at what the Vikings have done. Highland Park, they beat them 71-6 in week 1. Last week, beat Hayden 35-14. So, you know, you got Junction City this week, and then you're basically in Topeka. You're going to go to Topeka West next week. So, right now, I mean, that is a team to keep an eye on in Class 5A. They've got a good offensive line coach over there, too.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what else? There's going to be another, I think, probably pretty decent game as St. Thomas Aquinas and Bishop Miege play. It would be the number 1 team in Class 5A and the number 1 team in Class 4A coming together.
How many can Miege lose yeah. in a row and continue to be number 1?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. St. Thomas Aquinas is 2-0. Miege is 0-2 and continues to be the number 1 team in Class 4A. And I can't imagine there'll be a lot of people who would argue with that.
Right. I mean, here's the deal. They're going out there and picking up those big games, and yeah, that's just what they do.
In our area, Nemaha Central, number 3 in Class 2A, they're going to be at Sabetha. Both of those clubs are going to be 1-1 coming in. So, and teams you know about, Opie, number 1 in 1A, they are going to travel to a 1-1 Linden.
Kind of a nice thing to see that there's only 4 games that were canceled this week. So it's nice to see, I guess, those numbers coming down a little bit on canceled games.
Yep. So all said and done, high school football is really in the role. They're all getting, you know, all these teams are, I think, beginning to find their stride just a little bit.
And in case I know you were thinking about trying to get out to Sublette for that game, they are not playing Sedgwick. That's one of those 4 canceled games.
Oh man. So, okay. Well, I'm glad that you told me that. Hanover's number 1 in 8-man Division 2. They defeated Onega last week 70-36. Victoria right behind them, number 2. Thunder Ridge is 3. Axtell is 4. Frankfurt is 5. So some pretty good 8-man ball here in the neighborhood.
Do you struggle a little bit to see some of these teams that were 11-man go down to 8-man?
Yeah.
Right? Like an Onega, a Valley Falls. You even look across the river and you see like a LeBlond, you know, and you think, you just think of those schools as being 8-man. You're like, oh, wait, no, they have gone down to, or 11-man. You go, oh, wait, they have gone down to 8-man.
But still in 11-man in 1A, Opie, number 1 at 2-0, Smith Center, number 2 at 2-0. And you mentioned in 2A, Rossville, Silver Lake, Nemaha Central, 1-2-3.
Let's talk about Opie. They have Linden this week. Linden team that I feel like we see every year.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it always turns into a week 1 playoff game somewhere.
Class 3 with Andale on top, followed by Wichita Collegiate and Cheney. And we mentioned 4A, Bishop Miege is number 1, Andover Central. SJA is number 3. They're 0-2, St. James Academy losing to Blue Valley last week. But again, that was another 5-6. They've only played 5 and 6A teams so far in the season, St. James Academy in Class 4A. St. Thomas Aquinas on top, Mill Valley, Bishop Carroll, the 1-2-3 in Class 5A. And when we jump up to the big ones, we've mentioned Derby, Olathe North, Blue Valley North, Blue Valley Northwest, and the Manhattan Indians, 2-0, number 5 right now in Class 6A. Hey, we got a lot of Raven football to talk about. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, and we've got Bubba. We'll be back with a lot more Sports Look right after this. Back with you here on Sports Look, Gus. Nice road trip. The weather was beautiful last Saturday night. That was about that's about all the good stuff I've got to say. It was a tough outing for Benedictine at Peru.
The lights were better than I anticipated.
Yeah, they were good.
The press box was good. The hot dog was but all in all, that's about, the highlights of the trip.
Yeah, I mean, Peru State winning in that ball game 45-21 over the Ravens. And, you look at the Benedictine numbers. What do we have after a quarter? They had a first down, maybe two first downs in the first half. I mean, the offense struggled.
What'd they have? Like maybe four plays in the first quarter, I believe, offensively. I mean, Peru State did a great job of holding onto the football and doing what they wanted. Early on, they attacked the Ravens secondary in their shorter corners. And then as the game progressed, they just kept the ball on the ground and kept sweeping around the ends and picking up big yardage at a time. And for Benedictine, coming away with a loss in that game really hurts. I think the thing that you got to look at right now is how do you beef up the defense, where everybody thought coming into the year the defense was probably going to be your strong point because you brought back some big pieces. But this is a defense now who's given up 86 points in 2 weeks.
Yeah, for the Ravens, they're unaccustomed to giving up that kind of points. And, it's just a tough day. Jalen James, 7 tackles in the ball game, and
he moved up to third all time the other day.
Yep,
and I'll have those numbers on Saturday. He's I believe like 30 tackles away from getting to number 2 all time.
And there were some guys who stepped up for Benedictine. Some names that we're getting used to. Gavin Spangler, another great game, double digit tackles for Gavin. And Spencer Witt has kind of made himself known. 9 tackles in the ball game last Saturday.
Yeah, so Spencer Witt's a guy who's been able to step in with a lot of the injuries going on in that linebacking core. And, again, it's been that whole next man up mentality. And he's done well with, embracing that and really stepping up for this defense when they've needed it. Right now, though, Benedictine facing a handful of injuries. They've got to get healthy and get everybody on the same page.
Yep, and the Ravens are going to have to probably find a little bit of a running game. Rayshon led the team again in rushing Saturday, 39 yards on 10 carries. You had 3 carries for Jayshon for 18 yards. Damon Wiegand, 1 carry, no yards. I mean, the Raven offense just not able to generate anything on the ground right now.
Yeah, and when they have plays through the air, the problem is, they're the big home run balls, right? Like, Gathright had a couple. Jayshon had some, catches. But the problem is, you're not hitting on anything but the big ball right now, right? You're not running the ball overly effectively. You're not hitting those underneath routes. I feel like our tight, when you look at it, our breakdown on the tight ends, they combined for 3 catches this year. And I really thought tight end would be a position, especially when you spread it out a little more and you've got athletic tight ends like that that are terrible matchups for every outside linebacker. When an outside linebacker sees, I've got Reed Levi, that is a bad matchup for him. But he's got to be thrilled that nobody's been throwing to Reed at this point. So.
Yeah. And here are the Raven receivers in last week's game. You had Gathright, a couple of catches for 58 yards. You had Buteau, 3 catches for 58. Jayshon, 2 for 44. Trey, 4 catches for 32 yards. And Rayshon caught 2 out of the backfield for single digits in receiving.
But you take away Trey, everybody had a 20-yard average, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and so that's the problem is you're hitting on the home run ball, you're hitting on the 20-plus ball, but you're not hitting on that line of scrimmage to 10, 15 yards.
Right.
And that's the pass you've got to build on and then take the top off later.
The reception averages were 29 for Gathright, 22 for Todd, and Buteau, 19.3. So that's 20 yards.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got it. Okay. So the Ravens are going to have to, again, get some offense, get a little blocking. I feel like Garrett is out there running for his life constantly right now.
Yeah, but I think some of that is his own doing, right? I think sometimes...
Sometimes you step up.
Yeah, I think that BC had a little problem with Peru on, some of that interior stuff. But sometimes I think Garrett just really gets comfortable getting outside the tackle. He likes that boot pass. He likes to get out of the pocket, stretch the defense, and then set his platform out there, which is fine. But this offensive line was probably not made to, you know, block like that. They're more of a give you a pocket.
Okay, here's the deal. He's not getting those 3 seconds. You need, what, three? Three will kind of get you there, right?
Yeah, 2.5 to 3, yeah. Yes.
And he's just not getting that. Now, on the other side of that, you talk about the little short passes. Joey Dominguez, the quarterback for Peru State, set a school record for completion percentage against Benedictine last Saturday. 20 of 27. That's not fabulous. That's a pretty doggone good percent. You'll take that day in and day out.
Especially for a guy who in week one against Missouri Valley went 4 of 16 with 2 interceptions. He threw half as many to the other team as he completed to his own team. Dominguez was a quarterback who sometimes a guy has that night. Usually you see it in basketball, but last Saturday it was Joey Dominguez, the quarterback of Peru.
Now let's end this conversation about Peru State on an up note. The Trey Adger kickoff return of 91 yards was a thing of beauty. That was Trey doing Trey.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if you're a special teams coordinator, you're thrilled to watch that video over and over because, yeah, Trey's just such a special athlete. They kicked away from him the rest of the game. But, yeah, that was an amazing play for the Benedictine special teams and really the highlight of the day.
And talking about highlights, other games that went on around the conference last Saturday found Grandview at home knocking off Baker. I thought it might have been a little bit closer than that. It was not 31-14. Grandview continues to roll.
Yeah, and 31-14, you say, well, that's not that close. It should have been a little worse. Like, Baker tacked one on late. I mean, because Grandview was up 31-7 for the longest time. So, anyway, Grandview, just head and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah. The Ravens' upcoming opponent, Clark, lost at home to Central Methodist, a team that kind of, in the back of your mind, has got to worry a little bit. Central Methodist winning at 31-16. Missouri Valley gets an unusual win, but then again, they did play Graceland. 38-24 Vikings there. Culver Stockton in a shootout. 38-35 over Evangel. And you talk about shootouts, 90 points. Well, 89. It was a 45-44 Penn victory over Mid-America. Not a lot of D in that one.
And didn't the freshman kicker hit the game winner as time expired, right? So William Penn coming away with a win in that ballgame. Take a look at the conference, and right now we don't have any actual like in-conference games or divisional games, but you take a look. On the north side, you got Grandview at 3-0, Culver Stockton and Peru at 2-1, Penn at 1-2, you got Clark and Graceland at 0-3. In the south division, you have four teams with 2-1 record. Baker, Central Methodist, Evangel, Missouri Valley, all 2-1. Benedictine and Mid-America tied at 1-2.
And games coming up this weekend. There's a Friday night extravaganza down in Nixa, Missouri.
I don't get that, right? Because, you know, a Friday night game at a high school stadium, so it must be out of town this week.
Yeah, at Eagle Stadium in Nixa, William Penn makes a long trip. It's going to be Penn at Evangel Friday night. That's going to be a 6 o'clock ball game. And then everything else is a 1 o'clock kick on Saturday afternoon as the conference, you know, begins to settle into afternoon games now. Graceland will be at Central Methodist. Peru State travels to Baker. I'm going to really be interested in this again as a measuring stick barometer kind of a game just to kind of see where Baker's at. Culver Stockton will be at Missouri Valley. Mid-America is at home with Grandview. Mid-America rolling up those points. Can they stay close? Can they score 44 against Grandview?
No.
I don't think so
either.
They
could score 14, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And again, of course, the game that you're going to hear here on K-Radio. Benedictine at home Saturday afternoon. Stars and Stripes Day. Military folks, first responders, bring your ID. Get in for free. Cheer on the Benedictine Ravens at home. Our K-Radio pregame at 12:30. Kickoff at 1 o'clock. Got another great halftime from a playoff veteran Raven that we're going to be sharing with you. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's Bubba. More Sports Look on Care Radio right after this. We're joined here on Care Radio at halftime with Bubba Pearl, offensive lineman for the Benedictine Ravens. Bubba, it is so good to talk to you, my friend. How's it going?
So good talking to you also. It's going well. Just out here grinding away, trying to continue to make a buck.
Let's do the quick Bubba Pearl bio. I mean, you're not from so far from Atchison, you know, out of basically North Kansas City kind of an area, right?
Absolutely. It's Parkville, Missouri, so just, you know, south of the airport a few miles.
And how did you end up coming to Benedictine? Because I would suspect a big, strong guy, athletic guy like you had some opportunities.
Well, I have family there in Atchison, Kansas, so I'm pretty familiar with Atchison. Been up there a bunch as a kid, things like that. And when Coach Wilcox came and recruited me down out of Parkville South, it was just a no-brainer. You know, I'm 45 minutes from home. I already had family there in Atchison. The Coach Wilcox legacy that was already, you know, left at that time from him of just being a family man and going to a Catholic college where I could further my religion and things like that. It was just absolutely a no-brainer to go there.
And, of course, how cool is it that you're so close to home, not only with people who are already here in Atchison, but your family? I mean, they could hop up and get to see you play a lot in college.
Oh, absolutely. You know, family's huge in my eyes, and, you know, needless to say that my mother could get to me in 45 minutes if she really needed to was amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the great teams that you played on and some of the, you know, great guys that were on those teams along with you. And we're talking about teams this year and honoring teams this year who were in the postseason, and one of your clubs was that.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so tell us a little bit about what's it like to be on a team and you are going to the postseason. I mean, what's that got to feel like?
It's amazing, you know. That year we fought and fought and fought and fought, and, you know, just to name drop, you know, we had the Cameron Four, who was, I think he was either that year or the year before, the NAIA Offense Player of the Year. We had the Jordan Ancars, who I think that year was the Defensive Player of the Year. We had, like, the Ashtons, that was just such an amazing leader and fun to be around. We had the Eric Bosslers, who, if you don't know Eric Bossler, probably one of the funniest people you'll ever meet in your life. And it was just a family thing. Like, walking into before that year, it was just like a feeling that, you know, we'd be able to fight that year and continue, you know, basically play free football, you know, play until we're done.
And this was 2011, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. So for the couple of years before that, you know, they were a little more lean years. You know, you battled through, you know, against some excellent teams in a very strong conference, and you had not quite gotten to the playoffs, got a little bit close, didn't quite get to the hump. When in that 2011 year did you and maybe your teammates say, hey, you know what, we're going to make this. We're good enough to be this.
Absolutely. I think it was, in my eyes, we had, obviously, with the conference that we're in, you know, it's going to be the Bakers, the Mid-Americas, the Benedictines, and the Mo Valley. We had, I think it might have been homecoming or senior day, one of those days that we, you know, we had Mo Valley coming in, and, you know, that's always our big rival, I think, in my eyes, Missouri Valley. And we had just, we worked our butts off that. We came up with a great game plan on the offensive wise. I know on the defense wise, they had an even better game plan, but to just pound the ball. I mean, I think our game plan was run the rock, you know, as many times as we can, because our front five on our offensive line was just better than their front seven. And once we had won that, it was just like the sky's the limit. You know, if we could continue just to pound the ball and keep defenses on their toes, and then, you know, maybe a play action or catch them off guard, you know, coming out and just throwing the ball, you know, that's when I knew that we had a real good shot of making a deep run.
Gus and I have a soft spot in our hearts for the guys who do the hard work, the fullbacks who block in the backfield, and those offensive linemen, which is so important. And you mentioned, you know, the names of a couple of those guys, you know, that you worked with like Eric Bosler. But you also were on the line with guys like Ryan Fontenot, when he was a lineman, you know, at the same time as you, and Cody Giroux, and, you know, some big, strong, real hard-nosed football guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ron Fontenot, I'm pretty sure he was from New Orleans also, down that way. He was one of the funniest guys I've ever met, and I'm still in communication with him. Great guy. I mean, the guy was the size of a Mack truck and just had the athleticism. I don't know if anybody knew that. A guy could dunk a ball. Like, I mean, he was good 6'6", 300-plus pounds, and could palm a ball and dunk it very easily.
And you guys just went out there and were so business-like about it. Now, who was the offensive line coach at that time?
It was still Coach Papagiorgio.
Coach Pops, what a classic guy he is. I mean, you have to love practice with him because, you know, he knew what was going on, and he was a great inspirer for young men.
Absolutely. The energy that he brought, one thing that I always knew of Coach Pops is you have to match his energy and his just fire and drive for teaching us the game that he knows and loves. So if you match his energy and play with the passion that he knew that we could play, then it was just a beautiful sight. And we had Coach Kelly, Michael Kelly, was also our grad assistant at that time, which he brought another dynamic to the coaching aspect. His energy of just, obviously Coach Pops knows the game. He'd been around it for years. And Coach Kelly, from being a player himself, but a little bit younger, who could, you know, relate to us a little bit more, of just matching our energy, and he just brought a different dynamic to it, and it they gelled amazingly, which also brought us to a better gel point, you know, just the drive. Like, I don't know how many other colleges have just an offensive line locker room, because that's how important, in my eyes, the offensive line is. I'm not saying anything negative about defense linemen, but the offensive line, we set the tone. We set the tempo, and Coach Pops and Coach Kelly drove that, you know. Starts with us. As soon as we break the huddle, get up to the line, look and see what we got, and to just rip the face off of somebody else.
And, of course, you were working and operating beneath a head coach in Larry Wilcox, who also was an old offensive lineman in his playing days. So, I mean, he also had an affinity and an understanding for the position.
Absolutely. I mean, just the name Larry Wilcox, I mean, that we don't have to say anything else about that man. Just what he did for all the young athletes, for the college, for the town, for the sport, for the conference, for everything involved with football and Benedictine and life and religion, needs nothing else to say, you know. Like, he's just an amazing, he's an amazing person.
Huge playoff game as your Raven team traveled over to Georgetown, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did.
Tell me a little bit about that trip and your memories of that game in Georgetown, Kentucky, against a team that was, you know, always in the top couple in the nation.
Mm-hmm. So the trip itself was fun. It's a long trip, especially to be on a bus. I think it was a 12-hour trip itself, driving, and, you know, 12 hours with a bunch of football players on a bus can be as fun and as entertaining as it can be, and just long and drawn out. We left, and I think we stopped in like St. Louis and kind of ate and stretched our legs, and a lot of movies were played for that trip. But the game itself was super exciting. We had a lot of alums that made it out to that game. We had a lot of family members that drove down for that. We had a lot of student athletes students that were there, and just the feeling of being down there, and like, it was just nostalgia on that one.
Now, being 10 years removed, and isn't it kind of hard to believe that you're 10 years removed, you know, from the program as you've graduated and moved on into professional life?
It is very hard to believe. It seems like it was just yesterday that I was moving into the dorm rooms. I think freshman move-in day, it was either this past week or this week coming up itself. And as an athlete, we were there early, but it's funny that it's this time, 10 years ago, over 10 years ago, that we were, you know, strapping it up for what seemed to be my last time playing under Benedictine helmet. And I could still remember and hear the sounds of everything that led up to that year.
What are some of the other takeaways that you, not necessarily from the playoff, although that's been a focus for us here in this season, but from being a part of the program? Coach Wilcox was always full of information. He was full of inspiration. What were some of the things that have transferred for you from Benedictine football into your current career?
I think one of the biggest things is that still hits me. It's being a part of Benedictine and that football team, it's a family. It's, you arrive as strangers, you grow as one, and you leave as family members, I think that saying was. And just how to be a better man, how to wake up every day and knowing at the end of the day, like, who I look at in the mirror, is that who you want to be? To know that every day is a new challenge and to just live life to the fullest, to not take every day for granted, to just enjoy the small things. I know it's a lot of cliches there, and things like that, but Coach Wilcox instilled in us to be a better person, to be every day, be better than what you were yesterday. If it's, in your career wise, in your family wise, in your religion, and to just to continue to grow. Life's going to throw a lot of things at you. But it's how you handle those things thrown at you is how you're going to be, how you're going to grow as a person.
So if you're talking to one of these young players, maybe freshman, sophomore, he's just getting started, maybe doing a redshirt season or just trying to get his feet wet, trying to find a place in this system, what are some of the Bubba Pearl pearls of wisdom that you would throw at him?
Enjoy it. Definitely soak it up. These will be the best four and a half years of your life. Get out there and make friends with people who you probably have not, made friends with, because there's all walks of life that come through that campus. Get out there, enjoy the activities that they have on campus. Get out there, go to the different sports, be a part of the school, be a part of the system, and just enjoy it. Study hard. I wish that was one thing I should have done a little bit more, is study hard. Figure out the balance of it, because, if you're a freshman, you're probably not going to have, mom and dad or whomever, telling you to go to bed, telling you that you need to do your laundry, telling you that you need to study, telling you, to wake up early and eat. Find that balance, because that balance is going to transfer over when you become that independent adult. And then just have fun. College is all about having fun. Find your niche, stick with it, and then just get out of your comfort zone a little bit. College is going to throw you a lot of different pieces and bones, and just take it. Take it and have fun. Run with it. Get out of town. My mom always told me to, don't go visit a place. If you're in Kansas City, don't go home with somebody that lives in Blue Springs, for the weekend. Go home with somebody that lives in Omaha. Go home, go enjoy, spring break. Go, find people that live in like Illinois or somewhere else, to just go home and try to figure out how they are. It's fun. You're supposed to get out and enjoy that part of life, and this is the time.
Bubba Pearl, I also have to share with you that not only are you a big, strong man on the football field, and we're an inspiration out there, but you are an inspiration to a lot of people. You brought charisma to the team, and anybody who ever met you will remember you and respect you, because you were the kind of a guy who would take that little extra time and, my children always enjoyed. You were like their favorite guy. Whether you were at practice, whether you're walking back to the locker room and you would visit with them, I mean, you were the guy they looked at, and I think they're not the only ones. We certainly appreciate you taking time here today and having been such a great Raven. We look forward to you coming up to the stadium this year and seeing the team.
Absolutely. I can't wait. I'm, you know, keeping up on the social medias about the team, the new coach, and I'm loving it. I'm very excited to see what's going to happen with the guys this year, and excited to see the new things that are happening all across that school and how beautiful it is. And it's an honor to be an alumni from that school. Like, I've made so many friends and family members from that school. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Bubba Pearl, you're the best. Thank you very much, man. Best of luck to you, and go Ravens.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. We'll see you guys soon.
Back with you here for the fourth segment of our Sports Look program on this Thursday evening. And that's baseball season. You don't hear much about it around this neck of the woods, but it's still going on. Kansas City losing in, talk about no defense. How about a 12-10 game? Pitchers, not so much. Hitters, big night for both teams.
Yeah, and for the Royals, what, they scored 5 of those in the last 3 innings, right? Like, it was crazy. But when it's all said and done, you still came up a little short, right?
You're right. And they go to Baltimore for this weekend's games. Now, the thing that everybody's watching for Kansas City, of course, you know, they're paying attention to, you know, the new GM. And there's all that buzz about the possibility of a downtown arena, a downtown baseball stadium. Got any thoughts about it?
I don't know. I mean, so I was listening to Jeffrey Passan, right? He used to be a reporter for the Royals with the Star, maybe? And now he's a national writer for Yahoo Sports. And he was saying his problem with the downtown stadium is he feels like Kansas City kind of got burned with the Sprint Center because, you know, the NBA and NHL said, oh, you build it, we'll put a team there. And then it just has kind of been there. Now you go put in a downtown stadium, where do you put it? Everybody's, you know, other worry comes to, if you build a downtown stadium, supposedly the way it would have to sit, it wouldn't face the skyline because of the way that the sun sets and the ballpark needs to set. So you would be back to the skyline and facing away. I don't know. I think it'll happen just because I think there's enough people that are on board that want to do it. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll be fantastic if they do and
well,
where it is,
now,
but it'll just be different.
Okay, here's the thing. Number one, I don't know what you do with the K. I think it's still spectacular, even though it's 50 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did the reno on it, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and it is still pristine and one of the show places in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I think, number two, I don't think there's any proof that it really, that a new stadium, a downtown stadium, does anything to revitalize, you know, the whole downtown. It will the neighborhood, you know, kind of close by, but I think I feel safer walking in the parking lot out at the Truman right. Sports Complex than I do at a parking lot, you know, in downtown Kansas City at 10 o'clock at night in the dark, you know, getting back to my car. So I got that going on. And then let's just throw in a wild card. What about Johnson and Wyandotte County?
See, there's
okay?
the problem.
Here we go. Now, you can get the skyline right.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is move that over across the state line, and that is something that would open up a can of worms. I don't think anybody wants to uncork.
Because, see, I think John Sherman opened the door the other day when he said, you know, we would address that when we got to it, but, you know, there would probably be some private funding and a lot of public funding involved with the whole project. The other problem is Jackson County, I think, feels a little burned that they put all this money into the stadium, finally get done with the bond, and, oh, by the way, yeah, it's not good enough, let's build something else. Like, it'll be interesting to see how Jackson County approaches that, because I'm going to tell you, I'm sure Wyandotte is lining up saying, well, we have a great space out here, you know, at the Legends, lots of parking, right off of 70, you know, I mean, not too far from 430. Yeah, like, this would work. And so I wouldn't be shocked if Wyandotte County, and you wouldn't have to do anything with the name, right? You stay the Kansas City Royals.
Absolutely.
Right? So I think that it'll be interesting to see how Kansas plays a part in this.
And so, I mean, as it is with so many things in the real world, it's not just all about the game. There's a lot of politics that get involved in this thing. And by the way, there's no politics in the way Salvador Perez is playing. He's just going out there and manning up. 44 home runs now with 17 games left. Can he reach the number?
What's your number? Because for me, it's 50.
The number's 50.
Yeah, I think he does.
I don't think he's going to end up at 47-8.
Right. Two nights in a row, he hits back-to-back home runs. He just right now looks like a guy who's looking for that pitch. He doesn't look like the Salvador we're used to where he's swinging at pitches out of the zone. I mean, he's waiting. The other thing that's really helping him, Benintendi starting to hit the ball.
He's been hot.
And Mondesi has been available at the moment, and he's hitting the ball. You have two guys around you that are hitting the ball. You're going to see more fastballs, right? I mean, because pitchers just can't continue to pitch around you. So, again, if Benintendi were not hitting the ball, I would say Salvador's in trouble. But where he is, I think that, you know, he's going to see some pitches. I think he gets to 50. Maybe that's the optimist in me.
I am totally hoping that he gets there, but I see it 48-ish, you know, I don't know. We'll see. Again, 17.
As long as he gets to, you know, the Royals record.
There you go. Hey, talk about records. Chiefs start off the right way for Kansas City fans as they go 1-0. Again, another struggling start, it seemed like, a little bit early on, but they did what they needed to do to come away with a, well, for them, when you look back on the year, you know, next February or March, you're reflecting on it, you're going to say, that was a pretty good win early on, a big win early on.
Yeah, you're gonna take that win early on, right? And for the Browns, I mean, it's just got to be.
Baker Mayfield can't play any better than he did.
No, I mean,
he was great.
He hit every box that he needed to hit and still couldn't win. And can I tell you the worst part is every time you see, like, highlights, all you ever see now is Baker laying on the ground looking
beating
like beating on the ground, throwing his little tantrum after he threw that interception.
Is that a meme just dying?
Yeah, he's in trouble with that one. But, you know, the Chiefs came out. They played well enough. On offense, I thought, you know, hit on all cylinders and looked great. On defense, you also have to take into account that they were without Tyron, they were without Frank Clark, and I think a lot of people thought Tyron would probably play because they activated him Friday, but Andy Reid said, hey, rather than risk a setback, I would rather he doesn't play this week. And I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of coaches that would not have taken that risk, right?
But, yeah.
They would have said, nope, I need him. This is an important game. And Andy said, you know, if he doesn't play, that's fine. We'll keep him healthy for later on.
I thought Chris Jones stepped up big.
Yeah, once he started to figure out the defensive end position, he was a monster in the second half, right? And some of that was the Browns, you know, losing one of their offensive linemen. Because let's be honest, the Browns have, if not the best, top two offensive lines in the NFL. I mean, for Chris Jones to get a couple sacks and Kansas City's defense to stiffen up when they did, I mean, it's big.
And following, you know, the typical scenario, your player or your offensive player of the week last week in the conference was Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, how many of those does he have already? Right?
If there's a shelf, he's filling them up.
It's just ridiculous. And some of those throws on Sunday, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy, right? Like, the one I think of is Myles Garrett is bearing down on him, and he just kind of sidearms it underneath Myles Garrett's arm. The ball goes up over a defender, and then the receiver makes the catch. And you're just like, you can't win like that, right?
Now, that said, if you want to watch Kansas City Chiefs, you get to do anything you want to all day. So if you got yard work, you know, you want to clean leaves out of the gutter, you want to take a nice nap, get the smoker out and cook some food all day because you got all day because the Chiefs don't play until Sunday evening. It is a Sunday night game with the Ravens. All right, Chiefs on the road, 7:20 ball game. Kansas City is 3.5-point favorite with a big 55 over under. That's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points because the Ravens secondary is completely beat up. I don't know if you watched it in the Monday night game where the Ravens and the Raiders played.
I watched a bit of it.
The finish was fantastic. I actually stayed up and watched the end of that game. I was tired the next day, but still, that was a crazy game. I just kept watching the Raiders pick apart that secondary for the Ravens and kept thinking, man, what is Patrick about to do to these guys? Because they're beat up. They've got a lot of guys out. They also lost Marcus Peters to that knee injury, and he's out for the year. So I just think that, You know, they're in trouble, and their offensive line is really struggling. Like, this is not the Ravens team they thought they were going to have a month ago.
Other games going on. Bills are at the Dolphins. That should be a good one. Noon o'clock game.
Yeah, I think that that's one to keep an eye on. The Bills really not wanting to fall to 0-2, and the Dolphins are playing better than I think a lot of people expected.
Lions are at the Packers for the Monday night game, and
who
even
cares?
Though Green Bay's an 11-point favorite, is anybody playing worse than them early on?
You know, Aaron Rodgers.
What in the world?
What, he had almost as many interceptions on Sunday as he did all of last year. I mean, it almost looks like he's taking that big check and, you know, tanking the season.
In the Big 12, and now that it's going to be Big 12, I feel a little better about that, throwing that number around. Kansas is at home with Baylor. Baylor's not too good, but they don't have to be an 18-point favorite in Memorial.
Yeah, they're an 18-point favorite, but I thought Kansas held really well with Coastal Carolina. You look at the score at the end, you say, well, it really wasn't, but for three quarters, they were right there. Can I tell you, Kansas at least looks a little more competitive right now under Lance Leipold. So, again, I don't think they beat Baylor, but I also don't think they lose by 18.
Well, K-State is going to be at home, and they've got always good Nevada team, man.
Yeah.
Out of Reno.
Yeah.
Those guys are not bad.
And they're a 2-point favorite at Bill Snyder Family Stadium.
Game that people will hearken back to from the day. They'll be having flashbacks of 1971. That's what's going to be on the pregame show, you know, flashbacks of that game. But it'll be Nebraska at Oklahoma Saturday. Oklahoma, 22-point favorite. They will go past that so fast.
Back in the day, those two teams, did anybody even score 22 points in those games?
Did anybody even throw the ball?
Right,
no,
even better.
No, not once. So that should be interesting, Nebraska at Oklahoma. Big-time game, number one Alabama is going to be at 11, Florida. Alabama's still a 2-TD favorite. And Auburn at Penn State. Penn State minus 5, a surprise to me, even though Auburn's 22, Penn State 10. I don't know.
War Eagle.
There you go. Hey, our sports look schedule. Just fantastic. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Maryhill Mount Academy at Pleasant Ridge High School football on Carve. 7 o'clock kickoff for that one. And then Saturday afternoon from Wilcox Stadium, Care Radio pregame at 12:30. It'll be Clark at Benedictine, a 1 o'clock kickoff here. Sportlook sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco John's, and Exchange Bank. Thanks to Bubba for being our guest. He is so fun. One of our favorites. Thank you very much for that. For Gus Couts, till next time, Tom Couts. So long, everybody.